The Baptist church stood on the corner of Ash Street and 3rd, a three-story white building with a pitched roof rather than a steeple. It could seat up to 400 people. It was here that Cash first heard the Bible stories that would exercise a hold on his imagination for the rest of his life, where he fell in love with the words and music of hymns, and where he first felt challenged by the message of the gospel. Although his understanding and appreciation deepened over the years, the lessons that he learned at First Baptist and the example of the simple Christian cotton farmers and their wives remained a constant reference point for Cash. Two of his closest friends while growing up in Dias were A.J. Henson and J.E. Huff. "We were like the three musketeers," says J.E. "We were three distinctly different personalities, but we never had an argument." A.J.'s father was Baptist and his mother was a member of the Church of Christ, so he had a choice of where to worship on a Sunday. Mostly he would go to the Church of Christ because the altar calls at the Baptist church scared him. J.E., though, would go with Cash, not only to both Sunday services but to the Wednesday night Bible study. He reckons that from the age of 8 onward they went 7 straight years without missing a single meeting. With that kind of record, it seemed almost inevitable that Cash would respond to an altar call one Sunday. Being saved was a cultural rite of passage in rural southern communities of the period. If someone hadn't made a decision by their early teenage years, the adults would wonder why. There were no open atheists in Dias, only good Christians and backsliders. The pressure to conform made it difficult to differentiate between those who claimed conversion simply because it was expected of them and those who had made a genuine commitment. At age 12, Cash answered the call during a revival in 1944. This was the age that many Southern Baptists regarded as the age of accountability, when children were considered morally developed enough to choose or refuse. This was the age, according to the Gospel of Luke, that Jesus went to Jerusalem with his parents for the Passover and, with a clear sense of his divinity, debated with the rabbis in the temple. If Cash remembered who preached the night of his conversion, he never mentioned it. It's unlikely that he heard anything that he hadn't heard before. It was just the right night. He'd always known that someday he would have to choose one way or another, and he tried to put it off. But this night, for a reason he couldn't explain, he felt that postponing the decision would, in itself, be a decision. How many times could a person put off salvation? If Jesus Christ was the way, the truth, and the life, what possible benefits were there in keeping him waiting? Cash believed in the reality of heaven. He also believed in the reality of hell. Heaven was like the sound of sweet music working on your soul at the end of a hard day's work. Hell was like the red glow of burning fields in the still of an Arkansas night. The fear of hell was one of the instruments God used to make us hunger after heaven. When the preacher called for those who wanted their sins forgiven to make their way to the front, Cash got out of his seat as the congregation sang, "Just as I am." "Just as I am, without one plea, but that thy blood was shed for me, and that thou biddest me come to thee. O Lamb of God, I come, I come." Cash would never regret or renounce this decision, and though he would go through long periods of disobedience, he never lost the conviction that Christ had accepted him, just as he was, and that nothing could reverse that acceptance. The church's 35-year-old pastor, Hal Gallup, baptized him soon after in the Blue Hole, a large pond used by all the local churches. J.E. Huff experienced a similar call around the same time. "When I was saved, I didn't want to come down because I felt so light," he says. I'm sure J.R. felt the same. Cash's conversion made him feel even closer to Jack. They had always been brothers by blood. Now they were spiritual brothers too. They were on the same road and headed for the same destination. Jack had even told those close to him that he wanted to become a preacher. Then, in May 1944, when Jack was 14, he was killed. Jack's death, more than any other single event, would shape Cash's life. Many times, Cash would tell the story of how Jack went off one Saturday to cut fence poles on the circular saw in the school's agriculture building, and how he tried to persuade Jack to go fishing instead, but Jack declined because he needed the money. Cash would then recount how later, when coming back from the river, he met his father carrying Jack's blood-soaked clothes and learned that there had been an accident and that Jack might not make it. 7 days later, with his family around the hospital bed, Jack passed away. What Cash never said in interviews or in his books, but confided to close friends and some of his children, was that his father had blamed him for Jack's death. This contributed to Cash's lifelong feeling that he didn't deserve the happiness and success that came his way. Ray told him bluntly that he should have died rather than his faithful brother, that he had no business going fishing while Jack was out working for the family. It's impossible to imagine what these accusations did to Cash's tender psyche, to lose the brother he idolized and loved, only to then be blamed for the death, had to be almost too much to bear. It perhaps explains why, in 1995, he told journalist Nick Tosches that while he had always referred to Jack's death as an accident, he actually believed something more sinister. There was a neighbor that went down to the shop with him that day and disappeared after the accident. We couldn't prove anything, but I always thought of it as murder. My mother and daddy didn't. They never mentioned that boy. Nothing was ever done about it. Many believe the neighbor in question was Everett Strawn, who as a 12-year-old happened to meet Jack on his way into the school and asked to join him in his morning activity. He stood to the side as Jack cut the fence posts on the machine. He was watching when the circular blade suddenly lurched toward Jack. It was one of those saws that you pull toward you, he recalls. It hit a snag or something. It jumped and came on out and got him. A rumor also emerged that a wrangler passing through the colony had somehow been responsible for the death, but no evidence has ever emerged to prove that anyone but Strawn was present at the time or that the death was anything but a terrible accident. The majority of fatal accidents involving circular saws occur when the guard is not in place, causing the wood to jump, or when the machinist reaches over the saw to clear away waste and comes into contact with the revolving teeth. In Jack's case, the blade ripped through his clothing and into his stomach. Blood splashed onto the sawdust on the floor. Yet Strawn remembers that Jack didn't fall down. He walked calmly out of the building and lay down beneath a tree, holding his stomach to prevent his intestines from falling out. I saw it happen, Strawn says, but there wasn't much I could do except to raise the alarm. He ran to the home of the school custodian, Mr. Matlock, who called an ambulance. Dr. Hollingsworth, the community's all-purpose physician, operated but couldn't repair the extensive damage and didn't expect Jack to last the night. With the pain controlled by morphine, Jack clung to life. On May 17th, the midweek Bible study at First Baptist turned into a prayer meeting for Jack Cash, and the next day he seemed to rally. He read letters and spoke to his mother. When he began hallucinating the next day, Dr. Hollingsworth, realizing his patient was near death, suggested that the whole family spend the night at the hospital. On the morning of May 20th, J.R. came to see his brother, ashen and swollen with gangrene, for the last time. He brought his cheek down next to Jack's and told him goodbye. Jack began to ramble. What he actually said has varied depending on the teller and the passage of time, but the consistent memory has been that he asked his mother whether she could hear the angels singing. Jack said that he could hear them, and that was where he was going. Then, with all his family gathered around him, Jack Cash passed away.